Good afternoon. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, the 22nd of April, the year 2015. Jeff Brown filling in for Hear Me Waste. Today we'll learn about the new issue of the UAS publication titled Echoes with the guest Rebecca Salzman and Lexi Cherry. We'll highlight this weekend's concert at Thunder Mountain High School. Harborview gym instructor Zach Stenson will be here to discuss Saturday's Running Colors 5K event. We'll get the details about Saturday's Creative Garden Design Workshop at the Baranoff. And Paula Scheer will be giving us a preview of her talk tonight for the Alaska Design Forum. That and Writer's Almanac, Burnout Music, and more today on the Juno Afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies, the low temperatures around 37 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, partly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 54. Friday forecast, sunny weather.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Navajo Nation has a new president after months of delay. More than a dozen people sought the top job in the 2014 August primary. One of the top candidates' Navajo language fluency was challenged. He was later disqualified. And after battles in tribal government and court, a special election was held Tuesday. Unofficial results show that more than 40,000 combined votes were cast for candidates Joe Shirley Jr. and Russell Begay. As KGLP's Rachel Cobb reports, Begay came out on top.
Begay and running mate Jonathan Nez won with over 10,000 more votes based on initial returns from 110 chapters. In Window Rock, Arizona last night, Begay said that the margin of the win was surprising, but that people wanted a change.
We're just tired of seeing the same old thing, doing the same thing, trying to accomplish the things that we want to see happen, using the same strategy, the same type of approach and method. And so with Jonathan and I, having had experience off the nation and then on the nation, I believe that we have what it takes to move the nation forward.
Dr. Shirley, who was also in Window Rock, thanked his supporters.
The numbers are what they are. I'm still very thankful because the people have been afforded to say their say-so. And that's just the way it should be. It's their government, it's their resources. And we wanted them to speak out, and they have.
Maroney Benally, who lost the 2014 presidential primary, now supports Begay, and while shocked by the margin of victory, particularly since Shirley had such a well-organized campaign, felt that this was as much a vote against Shirley as for Begay.
He had 8 years to address the issues that I see as division director, which he never addressed. And why did he want 4 more years? He didn't do it.
The issue of a Navajo Nation president's fluency in the Diné language will be addressed by a referendum scheduled for this June. For National Native News, this is Rachel Cobb.
Tribes in areas of South Dakota impacted by several powerful storms last year have a few more days to apply for federal disaster relief loans. One Northern Plains reservation is eligible for help as well. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
In June of 2014, the Midwest was decked by large thunderstorms that included heavy rains, flooding some regions for weeks. Tornadoes touched down in some spots and caused additional damage. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is eligible for low-interest disaster relief loans from the U.S. Small Business Administration. The reservation is split between South Dakota and North Dakota. The grants go to what the SBA calls groups that provide essential services of a governmental nature. The nonprofit groups that suffered storm damage could apply for loans of up to $2 million, but those applications have to be in by next Tuesday. Along with the Standing Rock Reservation, a dozen South Dakota counties are eligible for the disaster relief funds. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
This week, the U.S. Justice Department awarded 12 people and teams from across the country who are leading efforts to advance victim services and victims' rights. Among them was Lisa Heth, who was honored for her leadership in securing services for abused Native women and children on the Crow Creek Reservation in South Dakota. She established facilities for services like a battered women's shelter, a site for forensic and physical interviews, and a computer center for victims to search for jobs and take online classes. Heth also established a satellite shelter in Sioux Falls to offer culturally sensitive services. Suzanne K. Breedlove was also honored for helping create policies and tribal cultural services in Oklahoma. Awards were handed out in Washington, D.C. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Tribal Telecom May 4th, weaving pathways across the digital divide. Information on services and Tribal Telecom 2015 at ahcnm.org. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juneau Afternoon. Our first guests are Rebecca Salzman and Lexi Cherry from the University of Alaska Southeast. And they're working on this latest production of U.S. publication titled Echoes. Thank you for coming down the station today.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks.
So for people who don't know, what is Tidal Echoes?
Tidal Echoes is the University of Alaska Southeast Literary and Arts Journal. So what we do is we accept submissions from all over Southeast Alaska, and we take them and we compile them together to create a book for the public.
So they don't have to be student-written?
No, they do not have to be student-written.
About what percentage of them is student-written compared to others?
It's required of us as student editors to ensure that the journal is at least compiled of 25% overall of student work. However, usually it's a significantly more amount. It just varies from year to year, but it at least has to be 25%.
How many pages this year?
120 total.
And number of contributors?
We have, I think, around 49 contributors or 50 contributors in there this year. This year we received over 350 submissions, which is by far the most that we've ever had. And so that was really tricky to go through and figure out who was going to be in the journal. But I think overall there's around 50 people.
And how do you do that editing process?
The editing process is a little daunting, but it's a fun process. So we have an editorial board, which is made up of UAS faculty and staff, sometimes community members, but this year it was just strictly UAS faculty and staff, and myself and Lexi and Emily Wall, who's our faculty advisor. And what we do is we go through, we give the editorial board the manuscript that we receive, and we take all of the names off and we give it to them, and we go through and score all of the things anonymously. We have a scoring system, and then from there we go down, we take out different pieces, and we just kind of whittle it down from there.
Rebecca, you're the editor this year. Last year you were the junior editor.
I was, yes.
And this year, Lexi, you were the junior editor.
That is me.
Was it difficult for you to go through the submissions knowing that you're going to have to cut some out?
Not really. It's the editing process. I've been through several creative writing classes on campus, and so I'm aware that editing involves making sacrifices such as it is. I've had my pieces cut from things. So, yeah, it's just sort of something you know when you go into the job.
How has it changed over the years?
I think, if anything, that it's grown and become a far more varied journal than it has been in the past. I think in previous issues there's been an awful lot of poetry and also an awful lot of photography, which I don't have anything against those things. My major in love is poetry. However, I think that as it's grown, we have seen far more pieces of varied artwork. We've had ceramics. We've had pieces made out of, you know, a varied amount of different things. And we also have had plays in the journal. And also another thing that I think that has grown over the years is where the submissions are coming from. In the past, we've had, you know, just like a few Southeast towns. This year, we actually have a piece in the journal from Metlakatla, which is the first piece we've ever had from them before. We have, you know, like Sitka and Haines and Petersburg and Wrangell. And so I think that where they're coming from has really grown, and also what we're getting in the process of accepting submissions has also changed quite a bit.
And you're having a launch party this Friday at 7 o'clock.
We are, yeah. So the launch is going to be this Friday at 7 o'clock at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. And that will just include people reading out of the journal. Our featured writer and our featured artist will be there, and they'll be presenting their work. And it'll just be a great free event that's open to the public. We also always provide cookies and coffee for those that are involved for the food.
So you've got guests.
We do, yeah. So our featured writer this year is Ishmael Hope. And then our featured artist is Fumi Matsumoto, And so she's going to be there presenting her artwork to the public, and then he'll be reading some of his pieces. And the journal this year is also dedicated to Richard Dauenhauer, and so some people will be there contributing, probably reading some of his pieces as well as a remembrance for him.
Can we hear a sample?
Yeah, sure. I think Lexi will do it.
Yes. So I will be reading Watch Out for Falling Objects by Mary Lou Spartz. A very small asteroid fell into the boat harbor, frightening live aboard cats, sending coffee pots dancing on cold stoves, silverware racing to high ground. One cat, a calico, hissed, arched her back, walked sideways as a big wave lifted the little boat past startled jellyfish and tossed it out to sea.
That's from the new edition title Echoes.
Yes.
Again, the party is 7 o'clock on Friday.
Yep, 7 o'clock Friday, the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. It's free and open to the public.
And where can people get copies if they can't make it to the party on Friday?
If they can't make it to the launch, they're at a variety of locations in town, one of which is Hearthside Books will be selling copies. Also, there's some locations at UAS that will be selling copies, and they can always contact the faculty member, Emily Wall, and she would be happy to get you in contact with a copy.
All right, Rebecca Salzman and Lexi Cherry, thank you for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, I don't think so. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 22nd of April, 2015. Today is Earth Day, first observed in 1970. It's the birthday of the Enlightenment philosopher Immanuel Kant, born in Königsberg, Prussia, in 1724, who gave us the categorical imperative, namely, that we should judge our actions by whether or not we would want everyone else to act in the same way. It's the birthday of the poet Louise Glück, New York City, 1943, her father, Hungarian immigrant who helped invent the X-Acto knife. She struggled as a child with anorexia. Parents took her out of high school, put her into psychoanalysis. She was afraid that she might be cured to a degree that she would lose her creative drive. Instead, she said it was one of the great experiences of her life. She went to Columbia, published her first book, 1968, entitled Firstborn, moved to Vermont, and took up teaching. For a while, she had a period of writer's block for 2 years, spent time gardening and reading flower catalogs and listening to Mozart, but not writing. But one day she was walking around her garden, had the idea that she could write a poem narrated by a flower, and she did, and a couple of days later, another, and eventually those poems became a book, The Wild Iris, which won the Pulitzer Prize in 1992. Collected poems came out in 2012. She said, Louise Glück, "The thing that surprised me was how big the book was, because for most of my life I felt I wasn't writing. But the book was so large, it was a marvelous feeling that my current sense of failure might not be so reliable." Louise Glück, who said writing is a kind of revenge against circumstance, too, bad luck, loss, pain. If you make something out of it, then you've no longer been bested by these events. And it's the birthday of the jazz bassist and band leader and composer Charles Mingus, born in Nogales, Arizona, 1922. He played with Billy Taylor, Duke Ellington, Stan Getz, Art Tatum, Bud Powell, also with Charlie Parker. And after Mingus's death, an archivist discovered his complex composition, more than 4,000 measures long, called Epitaph, a 2.5-hour score that he kept in the closet because it was too hard for most of the jazz musicians he knew to perform. A 500-page score was assembled, and in 1989 it had its premiere at Alice Tully Hall in New York City, 10 years after Charles Mingus died. Here's a poem for today by Louise Erdrich, Spring Evening on Blind Mountain. I won't drink wine tonight. I want to hear what is going on, not in my own head, but all around me. I sit for hours outside our house on Blind Mountain, below the scrap of yard, across the ragged old pasture. Two horses move, pulling grass into their mouths, tearing up wild flowers by the roots. They graze shoulder to shoulder. Every night they lean together in sleep. Up here there is no one for me to fail. You are gone. Our children are sleeping. I don't even have to write this down. A poem by Louise Erdrich, Spring Evening on Blind Mountain, from her collection Original Fire, published by HarperCollins and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. Throughout the month of April, their favorite poem project, Florida, invites Floridians to submit their favorite poem. Florida-based listeners can submit their nominations at poetryfoundation.org/favorite poem Florida. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Sixteen minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau and KRNN FM in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Sarah Radke Brown, working with the Juneau Symphony and a whole variety of people for a concert this Saturday and Sunday. Sarah, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a major undertaking.
It is. It is a major undertaking. It's the Juneau Student Symphony. We have paired with the Alaska Youth Choir and the Juneau Bach Society to present John Rutter's Mass of the Children. Now, this concert is celebrating Alaska Youth Choir's 20 years as an organization. So as we mentioned earlier, that a lot of the participants are younger than the actual organization, which is great. This is a major undertaking. Bruce Simonson has been working with the Bach Society. Missouri Smythe has been working with the Alaska Youth Choir. And Tyree Peeney, of course, works with our Juneau Student Symphony. And Missouri came up to us and said, you know, how do you feel about doing the Rutter? She said, we've done it once before on a smaller scale, and we'd love to do it again for our celebration. You know, will you work with us? And we said, absolutely. This is a fabulous collaboration. We have a 30-piece adult choir. There are about 25 kids singing in the youth choir. There's also the Thunder Mountain High School choir led by Tyree Peeney that will also be joining us. So there's going to be, about 70 to 80 voices on stage, and then the student symphony is made up of adults and children. The student symphony is an all-ages, full-sized orchestra, and that's going to be really exciting to have, you know, the adults and the kids singing together side by side or playing an instrument together side by side. So we're really excited to present this concert. The first half of the concert, too, each group is going to present their own smaller program. The Student Symphony will be presenting Finlandia, and the Alaska Youth Choir will be presenting a couple works, a couple choices of their own, and then the Bach Society will do probably a couple pieces as well. But then the Rutter is the big one at the end, so we're really excited, too.
It must be a special feeling having these groups practice individually.
Oh, yeah.
And then
they all come together. Yeah, that's been amazing. You know, we had our first rehearsal as a whole group last Monday, and it was truly amazing to see everyone come together. I mean, the orchestra had not worked with a choir before, so, I mean, their eyes were huge. But by the end of that, we were all really, really getting into it and really excited to work together.
Missouri Smythe just walked in the studio. Missouri, congratulations for 20 years at the Alaska Youth Choir. It must be an amazing feeling.
Yes, it is, Jeff. Thank you so much for having us on your show this afternoon. We are very excited to be celebrating 20 years. It's unbelievable.
Could you go on a little bit of background of John Rutter's piece?
So the John Rutter piece, he's a very well-known composer in the world of choral music. And Mass of the Children was a piece that I heard many years ago when I'd taken the Alaska Youth Choir on tour to Colorado. And the piece, it is believed to be his memorial for his son. And when his son was 17 years old, he was working with his father in Clare College in England. And unfortunately, one specific day, his son had left the church and was killed in an accident as a young 17-year-old. And it took John a couple of years to be able to get back to writing music. And so he was commissioned to write a piece. And this was the piece that he wrote, Mass of the Children, which was then performed in Carnegie Hall soon after it was done.
Now, when you say Mass of Children, I think of just numbers. How many singers are taking part in the performance?
Well, I think for the Alaska Youth Choir, we have, I would say, about 30 singers. Thunder Mountain High School has another 20 young students who are singing. And then the Bach Society.
About 30.
About 30 singers. So do the math. Yeah, I think it's like 100 plus.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yes. I counted like 70. But, yeah, well, 100 plus, that's even better.
Yeah, so we have quite a few singers.
What else will be performed besides the Rudder piece? Well, is that enough?
The Rudder piece will be the second half of the program. It'll start with the Bach Society singing some chorales and then the Mass itself. But the first half of the program will be the Alaska Youth Choir, since it is our 20th. And so we've got a collection of pieces that each of the level of choirs will be singing.
And where is this happening?
It's going to be happening at the Juno Christian Center, which is the large church that is across, well, it's the same side as Fred Meyer.
All right. Thank you for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like? How much does it cost to get in? And what time do people need
to get in? Tickets are $20 for adults and $15 for seniors and youth. You can buy your tickets at Hearthside Books or the Jack or at the door as well. So,
Mr. I got a question for you. How do you deal with the number of kids who sometimes haven't eaten enough or have been too busy to practice? And then they've got other things on their mind, just being young people. How do you coax the best performance out of them?
You know, it's always a challenge when there's so many activities that young people have to choose from. But I think the opportunity to sing together as a group, and when they hear the piece of music, and they sing together, and their voices come together, that focus, I think, changes their mindset. And just like any sports which requires a focus and a direction, it's not any different from singing. And so I always try and pull out the beautiful parts of the pieces of music and how it relates to them individually and as a group. And so that's usually what happens at the end of a rehearsal. And young people have very sharp minds, and they pick up that melody quickly, and they sing it together, and before you know it, they have a lovely piece.
Mm-hmm. What's next on the horizon for the youth choir?
You know, one of the things that I've always wanted to do is I'm originally from New Zealand. And so, you know, before I finish my stint with the Alaska Youth Choir, I would love to take them back home to New Zealand so that they can see where I am from. And then one of my other loves for the choir is for us to be able to perform in Carnegie Hall. Mm-hmm. Those are just two things that I would like to do with them.
Practice, practice, practice.
For sure.
Sarah, one more time, can you remind the days and times?
Sure. Juno Christian Center, April 25th at 7 p.m., April 26th at 3 p.m. Tickets are $20 for adults or $15 for seniors and youth. Tickets are available at Hearthside Books, the Jack, or at the door.
Missouri Smythe and Sarah Becky Brown, thank you for coming down the station. Is there anything you'd like to add that I might have forgotten to ask?
I'm the soprano soloist, and Philippe Damerval, a good friend of Juno, is coming down from Anchorage to sing the baritone solos as well. So,
and just a quick note, Philippe used to be on the Alaska Youth Choir board, so it's kind of neat that he has this opportunity to come down and sing.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
But I know Philippe, and he's not a former member of the Juno or the Alaska Youth Choir.
He has been on the board, but not a former singer.
All right, thank you very much for coming down.
All right, thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Join us for a live TV recording at 360 with Bumiwa. These award-winning musicians showcase drum songs from the Inuit cultures of Greenland and Alaska. The one-hour concert is at 360 in the K2 building on Friday, April 24th at 7 p.m. Admission is $10 at the door. Info at 360north.org.
Appearing in concert here at the 360 Studios on Friday. In the studio with me now, we have a whole gaggle of people here talking about the Raining Colors 5K run, which is coming up a couple of Saturdays from now. Zach Stinson, Susie, Lindsay, Miley, and Jaron, thank you very much for coming on the station today.
Thanks for having us.
So, Raining Colors, is it true that everybody's going to start out wearing white?
Yes, everybody's going to start out wearing white at the starting line. It's a 5K out and back, and it is going to be this Sunday. It starts, registration starts at 11, and the race starts at noon.
Is this a fundraiser?
It is a fundraiser for the Harborview Triathlon Club, and we have a few of the members here that are pretty spectacular.
I'd like to ask our young runners here, what do you like about running?
I like finishing and getting awards.
I really like running outside more than running inside.
I like running because I just like feeling free and being myself.
Tell me again what the course is.
The course starts at Riverbend Elementary School. There's a covered area behind the school, and it goes out Brotherhood Bridge and back again.
Tell me about the organization.
The Harborview Triathlon Club?
That's right. Tell me about the Triathlon Club, please.
It is amazing. It's a group of 17 students from an elementary school that are competing in the actual Julie Hughes Memorial Triathlon in Sitka, and that is May 16th. So this fundraiser is one of their major ways to get money for the ferry and the housing costs over there, and they are so busy doing training. It's pretty phenomenal when you think about attempting a triathlon at any given time, but to do it as an elementary student is pretty phenomenal. So these kids are a great group of kids. If you come to the Color Run, make sure to stop by, and they will probably be some of the ones throwing the colored powder at the runners as they run by, and you'll be colorful by the time you get to the end. And make sure you find some of these awesome runners and bikers and swimmers, because they do it all, and they're pretty inspirational.
Tell me how the triathlon works.
Triathlon is a three-event sport. It is, the definition of it is you have to be crazy enough to not just want to do one. So they start out doing the run, and then they transition as part of the race and do a biking portion, and then they finish up with a swim. The run is about 2 miles, the bike is about 6-7 miles, and the swim is 10 laps down and back, which is 500 meters. And that's the child portion. Many of the kids in Sitka and other places, they do it as a relay. So one kid will do one event each. But our kids here from Juneau are incredible because they are attempting the entire triathlon as a single athlete, doing all three events.
How does the fundraising part work?
The fundraising, we have two major fundraisers, and you will probably know what they are because the Color Run being the most popular run in all of Juneau, and also the Zombie Run in the fall is put on by the Triathlon Club. And that's these are major fundraisers to get the funds to get geared, fed, trained, equipped, and on the road ready to compete in this triathlon.
Now, could people contribute to the fundraising part of it?
Show up. Come be part of the fun. Come be part of the fundraiser on Sunday. Again, it's at 11 o'clock is when we start registration. If you want to pre-register, you can go to NAO, Pavitts, Foggy Mountain, or Harborview, and also go to active.com, and you can register for the race.
And I might also just add that once you register, Susie, who you've just been listening to, has designed some really incredible T-shirts that some of the kids here are wearing that everybody gets for the run that already have a splash of color on them.
I'll ask my young runners here, what kind of special things have you been doing to prepare for the race?
Every Monday and Wednesday we have been swimming and running, and after school's on Tuesday we have been biking.
We've been swimming on Wednesdays and Mondays for about half an hour, and we've just trying to prepare. So because if we hadn't been preparing ourselves and we just jumped in, we wouldn't be able to make it. And so this is just preparing us to be able to do it.
We've been having Monday meetings, and we talk about like how we're doing during lunch.
All right, I've been talking to people involved in the fundraising Raining Colors event coming up this Sunday. Tell me again the facts about where people should go and what time.
The event is at Riverbend Elementary School in the Covered Pavilion. Registration starts at 11 and the run starts at noon. And it'll be this Sunday. In a couple days, so join us.
Anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't think so.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
She's got her single, she's gone, and now she's out on the track.
comes from Alaska Canopy, now accepting applications for the 2015 summer season. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
It's 36 minutes past the hour and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau and Karen and FM in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are here to talk about the Creative Garden Design Workshop going on this Saturday, the 25th of April at the Baranoff from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. In the studio with me are Valerie Hillier and also Ed Byarski. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
First of all, what is a garden club?
Garden Club is a community-oriented nonprofit organization that started in 1927. We don't have records all the way back there, but in the mid-40s, we do have some records from there. And we go in the community and help different organizations or peoples that might need help with their gardens. We have a plant sale, which is our big fundraiser to continue to manage. We do scholarship programs at the University of Alaska for anyone involved with environmental or any kind of gardening type of or landscaping type of degrees they might want to go into. We offer a $2,000 scholarship through the university. We go to the Pioneer Home, and we do landscaping at the Pioneer Home, as well as the ferry terminal. And so we are really community-oriented. We put on different workshops, as well as we have our meetings every second Saturday of the month. And we have come into the media age, or the social media age. We have a Facebook page as well as a .com page. So if you're interested in any of our events, you can go to those places.
Tell me about your featured speaker.
Her name is Sue Getz. She is from Gig Harbor, Washington. She has a business called Creative Garden Design, and which is out of Tacoma, Washington. She has been doing garden landscaping and design for over 14 years. She's been featured in different magazines and won various awards. She is a certified horticulturist and a writer, and so she has published books and some other publications. She'll be coming up to our workshop for 2 days. The first day will be to share her different topics. One of them is Don't Fear Gardening, which is kind of to put everyone at ease about what do you do with your garden. And that was my point when I did invite her up here with the garden club, because I had that same thought. What do I do with what I have? I can put a plant in the garden and watch it grow, but how do I design it and make it beautiful? So this is what she's going to be helping us with. And her second topic will be Fix My Garden, which she's going to be featuring some local gardens here on a PowerPoint presentation and designing those for us so we can see exactly what we can do with that.
And Barisky will also be doing some talking, and Margaret Tharp as well will be there with a speaker. What are you talking about?
I'm going to get into a little bit more specific rather than general, and probably some of my favorites, blue poppies and primroses, and how well they do in so many of our gardens around Juneau. Juneau is the primrose capital of Alaska, after all.
What are creative accent plants?
Those are those special plants. You may have big beds full of small primroses, but I mean a clump of blue poppies, for example, will really draw the eye, at least for a few weeks of the year. So it may be a special shrub that has particularly nice foliage or great flowers. Again, most of these individual plants may only be flowering for a week or two, like lilacs, perhaps, but we use them as a special accent in the garden, and then we hopefully have some other things which will complement them. Maybe those plants will have both flowers and maybe fruit and also nice fall color. So, and if we're really lucky, maybe they'll have interesting winter shape, too. So those are kind of the accent plants in the garden that draw our eye into the garden or along the garden path.
Valerie, you want to talk about Margaret's workshop, please?
Well, Margaret is going to be talking about the borders. Now, a lot of gardens, you know, you see around would have, you know, just to frame your garden with. And she has got quite an eye for landscaping here in Juneau. And so she'll be just giving us ideas on how to place those plants and where those borders would be to to give a dimension and creativity to your garden.
Can you tell me what's going to be happening Sunday?
On Sunday, yes. We are going to have Sue available for appointments. She does on-site garden design and consultations. She can do that from 9 o'clock in the morning till dark. And she does that in one-hour increments. It's $75 an hour. And we'd love to have anybody give us a call to make those appointments. Also on Sunday, just a plug for the Master Gardeners, right after the, not on Sunday, but Saturday, the Master Gardeners will have a potluck dinner at the Sandy Beach in Douglas, right after the garden workshop.
And hopefully we're calling all Master Gardeners to show up, and actually Master Gardener wannabes also, to talk with existing gardeners. And if they've got questions about what to do in their gardens, they can bring their questions along and share some. It is a potluck, so bring some tasty snacks along, and we'll talk about gardening, of course.
Not to take away anything that you'll be talking about on Saturday or Sunday, but general guidelines, where do you start when you want to personalize your garden?
Look at other people's gardens. Look at your own color preferences. Do you want fragrance in your garden? There's some really fragrant plants, maybe, that work in Juneau. I suggest other folks look around your neighborhood to see what other people are gardening with and growing. Do you like these plants? Do you not like these plants? I definitely do not want any of, maybe rhododendrons in the garden. Or maybe I can't stand the color pink. So, no pink, but oranges and purples and blues. So how do you personalize it with your own assortment of plants, collections maybe? Have the stuff that you like. And, I mean, are you gardening for yourself or are you gardening for the neighbors? Some folks do that. So what do your neighbors see? But I like my own garden and what I want to see.
No Fear Garden Design and Fix My Yard, Creative Gardens with the Real World are the two topics that we're going to be talking about this Saturday. Could you elaborate a little bit more on Fix My Yard, please?
Fixing My Yard, I would say, just from my own experience, that I have a very hard glacier ground, and I've had to purchase topsoil to fill in. And I think that in creating my yard, the fixes that I would need is to take in consideration location on where I want the garden. I have a lot of hillside. I have two running streams. Whatever you might have, if you have fences, do you want to border those? I'm on the highway. Do I want to block noise? I mean, there are so many creative ideas that we could do just to fix. Right now, fixing at this point would be almost beginning from the beginning to work a yard. But some people have just maybe purchased a home and it's pretty rough there. And so, just to get some ideas maybe at the workshop or from other gardeners, exactly what Ed was saying, go around, look what other people have been doing. And make that fix by creating something that you would enjoy.
What do you say to people who don't want to spend a lifetime gardening, but they still want their garden to look nice? There's some speedy tips.
Perennials, of course, because they grow every year. You're not just buying them and replanting them. I would say also it does take some care. Get your neighbors, a group of people to get together, call the garden club and we'll come out and help you. Weeding is probably the biggest thing here. They take over so fast. So I would say, it's going to take a little work. Gardens take work. But I think of these beautiful days, it's one thing that anybody in the dirt will enjoy going out there. It's kind of relaxing for me also. So. Just incorporate as many people as you can to help you if you need, and everybody can enjoy it.
And you could be featured tomorrow morning on Morning Edition. Any chance for a preview of what you're going to be talking with Matt Miller about?
Oh, well, among other things, the weather. It's always a hot topic, or in this case, a cold topic. Frost this morning. I was out at 7:30 this morning spraying my plants down with water, trying to not lose all those tender leaves. What we're doing in the garden this time of year, which is starting to plant. This is the weather. If we're warming our garden, warming our soil, that's really the critical thing right now. And making soil improvements, mixing in compost.
Tune in tomorrow morning on Morning Edition for Ed Byarski on Matt Miller. Valerie, you want to tell me when the plant sale is?
The Juno Garden Club plant sale is going to be right the Saturday before Mother's Day, and it will be at 9 o'clock in the morning at the Safeway parking lot. This is an annual event every year. There will be lots of great shrubs, trees, lots of primroses out there, too. So come on out, everybody.
So let's get back to the details. Can you talk about when and where the Creative Garden Workshop is?
The Creative Garden Workshop is going to be at the Baranoff Treadwell Room. So when you come in the lobby, there'll be signs to show you where to go. It's on Saturday, April 25th at 10 to 5 o'clock. We will be taking cash and checks only. It's $35. We don't have the credit card use yet. And there will be the about every hour will be a speaker. We'll break for lunch, and after that, we'll come back for some more speakers, and then there'll be a panel discussion with questions and answers, along with books, the Juno Gardener's book, Southeast Alaska Gardener, will be available for purchase, as well as Sue's book, which she wrote a book called Herb Lover's Spa Book, which is all the different ways you can use, like, lavenders and different things for spa use. So, yeah, and that is available also.
And anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
I think just everybody, if they could come out to the Master Gardeners on Saturday at Sandy Beach right after the workshop would be great.
And thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Jeff.
Digging, digging, this is how we dig the ground in our garden, digging, digging, this is how we dig the ground early in the morning. Hoeing, hoeing, this is how we hoe the weeds in our garden, hoeing, hoeing, this is how we hoe the weeds early in the morning. Planting, planting, this is how we plant the seeds in our garden, planting, planting, this is how we plant the seeds early in the morning. Growing, growing, this is how the peas will grow in our garden, growing, growing, this is how the peas will grow early in the morning. Picking, picking, this is how we pick the peas in our garden, picking, picking, this is how we pick the peas early in the morning. Eating, eating, this is how we eat the peas from our garden, eating, eating, this is how we eat the peas early in the morning.
Glacier Valley Rotary Club presents the 23rd annual Pillars of America Speaker Series. On April 29th, meet Walter Bond. In college, he suffered injuries that nearly cost him his dream of an NBA career. Learn about his story of perseverance and how he achieved his NBA dreams during his eight-year career. Bond is a passionate life coach and humorist. You'll be entertained and encouraged to stand out of the pack. The Pillars of America series is held at Centennial Hall. Tickets include lunch and are available at both locations of Hearthside Books.
This is Bird Note. Earth Day. Celebrate the Earth by riding the winds of spring. From a canyon in the west, where western meadowlarks sing, morning doves call, black-billed magpies chatter, to the boundary waters of Minnesota, where a pair of common loons returns to breed and raise their young. Spring peepers sing for mates.
to an old-growth hardwood forest in North Carolina, where warblers and vireos sing and woodpeckers drum. Sounds were recorded by Gordon Hempton. You'll find a link to his work at birdnote.org. Today's show brought to you by the Lufkin Family Foundation.
It's just about 8 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Next guest in the studio is here to talk before the Alaska Design Forum tonight at 6 o'clock at Northwind Architects, 126 Seward Street is where they're located. Rock Woman, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
So could you just please tell me a little bit about your work and why you're here today?
So fast, really pretty hard, but I will try. I'm coming from Slovenia, Europe. It's a small country, 2 million people. And the occasion for also to be in Juneau, it's lecture in three cities, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Anchorage. And this occasion, we also have exhibition of students' work of Harvard, of shelters, alpine shelters. One of the location we picked is also in Alaska.
What guides you in your work?
That's a really tough question.
tell me about your work in general, please.
Also, you know, to speak about your work, it's very difficult. So I'm not used to speak about, let's say, and especially in 1 minute. I think it's best if somebody has time to check it out tonight. But we have a various of projects. We started with my partner Spela back in 98. So it's a kind of scope of, let's say, 20 years of work.
Would you classify yourself as an architect? Or a designer?
Yeah, also a tough question, but let's say, I would say architect. Yeah, whatever that means.
What kind of things do you design?
Yeah, the scope of work is quite various, from, let's say, small chapel to house, private houses, till, let's say, football stadium and housings, like 650 apartments, for instance, is the biggest housing we did till now. So it's a kind of very wide scope.
How do you go about starting once you've got the first, once you sign the contract? What's the first thing you do? Do you visit the site and then?
Oh, this is also one of the questions from yesterday from Fairbanks. But I was answering 5 minutes, so I can say it's very different because whether it's competition involved, it means that you already consider and deliver some idea. And then especially I told the listener that it's never, each project is completely like a new baby. So you never know how to, let's say, that you can have the same, let's say, concept or the same method of work. It's completely different. Each project is a completely different story.
What's been the highlight of your career so far?
Highlight.
One of a few, perhaps.
There may be highlights when we got a project abroad. One of these is in Paris, France, which is kind of difficult to get a project there. The second very interesting story was in Belarus, so it's kind of eastern part of the Europe, to build a stadium, football stadium there. So that was kind of two picks I can put in my mind now.
What did you think when you first said I get to design a stadium?
Yeah, the first stadium we did, it was also back in 98. So I must stress out that we had luck because we got our state independency got in 1991. So from that time, there was no, let's say, many established offices. So younger architects could compete pretty much from the same line with the older ones. And also when independent state country needs a lot of new infrastructure, new buildings for an institution to get to start. So it meant it was a lot of competition. So we had luck and we won already as a student several of them. So that was kind of good start and starting point with already realizations, which is not very common elsewhere.
And what are you going to be talking about tonight?
I will try to first to present a bit that you can have a feeling what was kind of starting point from architects like us, and to present my country, which is very small. I don't think many of the audience will know about it. And that from that point, I will start to present a little bit from a different concept and basic concept from each project very briefly, and also will show several videos of the latest projects.
Rocco, man, thank you very much for coming down today to the show. 6 o'clock tonight at Northwind Architects on 126 Seward Street. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you very much.
Revelers are going to be appearing May 2nd to Saturday for the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival at the Juno Arts and Culture Center.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support